You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Today's show, I got a new microphone. Might have some weirdness with the volume here. I bought a every year I take another step up in terms of the quality of microphone. So I got a nice one here that I don't quite yet know how to use. So there might be a couple little hiccups along the way, but hopefully it's a quicker learning curve. It probably won't be. I am terrible with technology, as I've said on this show many, many times. This episode of the show, I want to go over some of my notes from the last couple of wins. I don't think they've been horribly exciting games. Chicago and Cleveland, two of the worst teams I've ever seen. Oh my God, certainly of the last 10 years. We've seen some tanking teams, but these two teams, and part of it is injuries. I think they're both probably a little bit better than they've shown in these couple of games against the Nuggets. But due to injuries, due to some weird coaching stuff, these were some bad teams, and it was good. It came right at the right moment for Denver as they had gotten their butts kicked by the Golden State Warriors, I think, to get a couple games where you can kind of regroup. And then again, having a bunch of guys coming back from injury, you want a couple easy ones at home to kind of get settled and get your feet under you. And that's what these two games provided Denver, a chance to really look great again, get comfortable, get some big minutes for guys that maybe hadn't been playing big minutes over the last couple weeks. So all in all, a really, really good stretch of games here for Denver that I think will benefit them long term. But before we get into those notes, if you have not listened to last week's episode, I think there was two really good ones last week. The reality check episode at the following the loss to the Golden State Warriors, there was an ending there that seemed I got more emails and more feedback from people for that one, where I talked about why I like sports and kind of gave a, I don't know if you even call it a rebuttal to Mike Kliss. It was just more of sharing some thoughts about the general idea of being a Nuggets fan and being a Denver sports fan. Really connected with people. I appreciate it. I got so much feedback, and I appreciated all of it from people kind of sharing their experience and how that one resonated. And then on Friday, Tim Connelly, the president of basketball operations for the Denver Nuggets, sat down with me for 45 minutes. I asked for a half hour. He gave me 45 minutes. And he basically walked me through all of the players on the roster: Gary Harris, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Malik Beasley, Michael Porter Jr., Jared Vanderbilt, Juancho Hernangomez. Walked me through all of them, how they scouted them, some behind-the-scenes stories about when they first acquired them, and then we used that as a format to talk about how he built this team and what he thinks of them. And it was just, I think, a fantastic interview. So if you have not listened to that one, don't miss it. A lot of people sometimes miss weekend shows or whatever. That's one is absolutely worth going back for. He gave a lot of stories that I had never heard before and just shared some great insight into his way of thinking and also about the team. So that's certainly a great episode you're going to want to go back and check out. Getting into this one, Skyline Knight against the Cavs. I wonder, Skyline Knight, where they wear the beautiful rainbow Skyline jerseys, I'm not sure why they chose the Cleveland Cavaliers on a Saturday as one of the games to wear those, because it almost feels like a wasted. You want those games to be special, and this was far from a special game. It was, quite frankly, it was a boring one. But it was Rainbow Knight, and they brought back a legend, as they have been doing all year, this time Kenyon Martin, who I love. Kenyon, first of all, Kenyon Martin, I'm a big Kenyon Martin fan as a player. I just thought he was such a underrated defensive guy. He was a big part of what people always talk about Carmelo's time here in Denver, and they're like, oh, as soon as he arrived, started bringing Kenyon Martin. There were so many great players on those Nuggets rosters, and Kenyon Martin, just an underrated guy who succeeded just about everywhere he went. All of the teams he was on were very good. And I think he's another guy who I think actually would have been really nice next to Jokic. I would love to see. That's a cool sort of cross-era team that you could have put together. Jokic at center, Kenyon Martin at power forward. And the reason I think it might actually have been a good combination, I've talked last year, if you're new to the show, I used to talk about Kenneth Fareed, how offensively he was such a good fit to Jokic because he would play the dunker spot so well. The dunker spot is the, if you grew up playing basketball, it's called the short corner. It's basically the spot on the court between the block, the low post, and the corner three. It's that in-between place right there on the baseline. And, you know, Kenneth Fareed is such a quick jumper and good rebounder with a big motor that he used to play that spot, and Jokic would drop the ball off to him when Fareed's guy helped, and then Fareed was just so quick to go up and dunk it that nobody could recover in time. Well, Kenyon Martin had that same thing. I mean, 45-inch vertical. He was taller than Kenyon by a couple inches. Super explosive athlete. Even with the surgeries, he still remains super explosive. It's like it never went away from him. And but he would have just been such a quick leaper. He was fine with being a low usage guy and playing that role, because a lot of times people playing the dunker, they don't like to stand there because it's almost like being a spot up shooter and nothing else. So a lot of players don't accept that role, but Kenyon, I think, would have. And then defensively, unlike Kenneth Fareed, defensively, Kenyon brought a lot of toughness, nastiness. He was a great weak side defender. He'd rotate. He played, you know, I think he was a very good team player. He was also a smart guy, man. Because he was so tatted up and a little rough around the edges, I think a lot of people maybe thought he was like a street baller or something like that. He was a super high IQ basketball player, and especially defensively. So he would have been in some ways like Kenneth Fareed on offense and Paul Millsap on defense. And the other thing that he would have provided that I think would have been nice next to Jokic is he brought a toughness and an intimidation factor that the Nuggets don't have. And Paul Millsap is a tough dude. Jamal Murray, tough dude. But Kenyon was the kind of guy that when he was on the court, you didn't mess with the Nuggets. And if you did, Kenyon was the type of crazy that would, you know, give a forearm to you when you're midair just to send a message. So I don't know why I like thinking about that front court, because those are two of my favorite Nuggets of all time. But it would have been a really cool sort of pairing to put together. On to the game against the Cavaliers, the first game since the second game of the year where all five of the original opening night starters were active and available, which it's crazy to think that they've made it this far and have been this successful without them, but it was nice to see all five guys active finally. I was starting to think it would never happen. Now I'm starting to think that those five will never start together again, which unfortunately I think is still a ways off. Maybe not. Maybe they'll try it on Wednesday, but my hunch from how both Gary and Will Barton look, that they'll probably slow play bringing everybody back into the starting lineup. But they were all back. It's an important step that was needed, and now you got everybody healthy. So you start out this game, and you know they had that Chicago game. They came out flat, ended up blowing them out because Chicago was so bad you almost couldn't lose to them. And then Cleveland, same thing. And part of this that's interesting, the starting lineup, which if you listen to the show, I'm sort of a broken record here talking about some of the same things, but I'm not in love with this starting lineup, and especially because of how many minutes a starting lineup plays together. You can say, oh, well, they'll start that lineup, but you know, they'll mix in the other lineups and they'll play their other lineups a lot. Well, when you start a lineup, the starting lineup almost always plays the most minutes. In this game against Cleveland, what's crazy is they played 18.6 minutes, the starters did. So that's Torrey Craig, Jamal Murray, Malik Beasley, Jokic, and Millsap. They played 18.6 minutes, almost half the game. According to NBA.com, almost half the game was that five. So, and you consider they didn't even play the fourth quarter. So that's a lot of minutes that five played together on the court. And it's just that's why I'm really, really excited and hopeful that we'll see the real starting five, because a lot of the stuff we see in the numbers really indicates that the Nuggets might have both a great starting unit and a great bench unit, that some of their worst units are some of the mixed ones in the way that they mix now, and some of their best ones are the ones that they will eventually go back to. Malik Beasley, this guy has so surpassed my expectations offensively this year that it's getting to the point where I'm actually starting to just put him into like a core piece for Denver. And I don't know how long he can be a core piece because of how good he is. You know, maybe he's a guy that becomes too good and Denver just can't retain him. But at the moment you look at him and you think, he is as good a shooter as the Denver Nuggets have on their roster, at least right now. Incredibly reliable, hyper athletic, doing a great job of finding his shot. And this is a problem we see sometimes with Wancho, certainly Tyler Lydon. There's guys that sometimes can't find their shot. Well, Malik Beasley, first of all, he has a quick trigger, but I think quick in a good way, not necessarily in a bad way. And then he just gets into the open spots and elevates on his shot. So he's getting 5 attempts per game at the rim this year, or from the three-point line. Here's what's crazy. He has this overall, he has the second most three-point attempts on the entire Nuggets roster, only 42 fewer than Jamal Murray. Think about how many more minutes Jamal Murray has played than Malik Beasley, and Beasley has almost taken as many threes. He's only made 3 fewer, so he has a really good percentage. I think he's second or third. Will Barton's only taken 25, but he's made 11 of 25, so he leads the Nuggets. Monte Morris, I think, is shooting like 44% or something like that, but Malik Beasley at 42% on the season, and he has taken the second most attempts of anyone on the team. And so if you watch this next game, if he gets 3 more three-pointers than Jamal Murray in the next game, then he will have the most three-pointers of anybody on the team, which is really, really impressive considering he hasn't played that many minutes. So Malik Beasley is a guy that I think certainly stays in the rotation. And then what I like, and I've talked about this before, when a player comes into the league and just does what's asked of them, that can be such a good thing. Because you get minutes and you're not doing too much. You're not trying to learn on the fly. But then once you've earned that trust, and I think Malik Beasley is now to a place where he's probably earned that trust with his teammates and with his coach, that now he can start to put the ball on the floor a little bit more, not too much, but you start to unwind little bits of your game and you do it slow enough so that you don't overdo it. You're not adding too much to your game all at once, but you add little bits, and before you know it, you have a much more well-rounded player. So Malik Beasley has earned the opportunity to extend himself, I think, a little bit, and certainly earned an opportunity to stay in the rotation. The Nuggets did get off to a sluggish start in this one, so I mentioned that starting lineup, and I don't want to blame it all on that. It just seems like game after game after game, the Nuggets are getting off to slow starts now, and it's just so weird. I at least think the lineup has something to do with the Nuggets not looking like themselves early on in games. The Cavs went to a zone in this game early on, and just this is how bad this team is. They went zone. I mean, this is the NBA in 2019. I mean, give me a break. So, terrible defense. Jokic did a great job of picking it apart. Jokic is getting to a place. Part of what I say he's so confident. He's so confident with the basketball that when guys start like hard doubling, and they always think they're being so cute and so clever when they're like, oh, I'm going to sneak up on Jokic with this double and he'll never see it coming. He almost never cares. It just, the double comes, he's so strong with the ball, so in control that he just maneuvers around them and then finds the open man. And in this zone, he did a good job of being patient, opening things up. He had a great kind of pass fake, got the defense to jump and then dropped it off to Murray for the wide open layup. So it's just silly. Watching this game, it's like, how much can we take away from this game? This team is so bad. Jokic Plumlee checks in for Millsap, and they immediately go on their run, and it made me look. I was curious. Plumlee and Jokic have developed such a nice chemistry that I almost look forward to when those guys share the court now. Honest to God, it's a crazy thing to say, but I think I like Plumlee at power forward now more than any other player on the Nuggets roster, and I know long-term that's probably not a great recipe, but those two have just played enough minutes over the last 2-3 seasons now that I feel like they really understand each other and they complement each other so well. And they have a better offensive chemistry than Paul Millsap. And again, part of this comes back to that dunker spot thing I was talking about. Mason Plumlee is much more athletic than Paul Millsap. He plays above the rim. He's a lob threat. He's an offensive rebound threat. He plays, Paul Millsap always plays focused. I think Mason Plumlee plays a little bit more frenetic. And that, alongside Jokic, I think a little bit of that energy is just more useful sometimes than the positionality, I guess. That's why Fareed was so good. I think Mason Plumlee has a lot of that as well. So I decided to look. Over the last 12 games, which is when Paul Millsap has come back, the Jokic-Millsap combination is a positive net rating of 13.5, which means the Nuggets outscore opponents by 13.5 points per 100 possessions. Your average game has about 100 possessions, so that gives you an idea. It's really good. Plus 13.5, that's really, really good. But the Jokic-Plumlee lineup has a net rating of plus 21.8, which is absurd. It's just absolutely silly. When you look at the Nuggets, like, net ratings with Jokic on and off, it's always kind of shocking. This team is you watch a game sometimes and you're like, oh man, I hope Denver can play even here. I hope that, you know, they can go on a little run. 99% of the time when Jokic is on the floor, the Nuggets are outscoring people, and statistically this bears out. It's just wild. But both guys really good. Jokic and Plumlee just on a whole other level. And while they do have fewer minutes together, and then the sample size with Millsap is bigger over that stretch, it's still kind of interesting to look at and say, man, Jokic and Plumlee really do just have such a chemistry. That being said, both of those net ratings are really good. Will Barton looks really rough still, and it's bad enough. I think we saw this with Paul Millsap last year. When Millsap came back, you were like, okay, it's clear he is not going to be the exact same guy. With Will Barton, I'm not ready to say that all year he won't be the same guy, but I have a feeling that it's probably going to take fans won't be patient. Fans are already like hopping my mentions from time to time to try to like just bring him down or whatever. But I do think that fans probably would be wise to be patient with him and sort of look at him more as like a get to the All-Star break and start showing signs by the All-Star break that he's back, and then maybe with a week off and some training and stuff, he can be back to 100%. Because I've sort of readjusted my expectations with him, and I don't know. This is why I say maybe Malone wants to go back to the starters. I think there's a case that even if you limit minutes for Gary Harris and Will Barton, it's still smart to start the guys that you're going to start and start working on that rotation. In fact, I 100% think it's what the team should do, but I don't think he will. And then when you watch how Will Barton has played, I could see why he maybe would be really slow to bring him back into the starting role, even if his minutes are reduced, because his timing is off, his rhythm is really more rhythm than anything. There's a handful of shots he passes up. There's a handful of like drive and dish that you could just see he's like not in the right rhythm. So, and then, of course, his touch on like floaters and layups. His three-point shot has looked great, but the in-between game has not quite caught up to him yet. So he's probably going to take a little bit of time. Who does look great is Monte Morris, who, when he knocks down 6 of 7 shots as he did in this game, I mentioned this before, Jokic and Murray, when they're on, Denver doesn't almost never loses. But if you get a contribution from one other guy, Denver's winning by 10-plus points. Well, they got contributions from Jokic and Murray, and then they also got them from Malik Beasley and Monte Morris, and that's enough. That's all you need. You're going to win by 30 points a lot of nights, even against mediocre teams. Maybe not great teams, but against middle-of-the-pack teams, Denver's going to win by double digits when you get four guys playing at that level. So, and it made me think – this will be an aside, but Isaiah Thomas, there was a rumor that came out from Adrian Wojnarowski. Rumor. It's Adrian Wojnarowski, who I think is the most respected name in NBA breaking news, gossip, rumors, whatever. And it came out through him that the Nuggets are optimistic that Isaiah Thomas will be back in X amount of days or something. And, you know, we, of course, at Denver Stiffs ran with that because it's Wojnarowski. It's Woj. His word is gospel 99% of the time. Well, what's interesting is that report was disputed by Michael Malone ahead of Saturday's game. He said, and I quote, "Don't believe everything you read," which is funny because, again, we're talking about Woj. I just never heard anybody say, like, "Don't believe Woj." But he said that the team does not have a timetable. They do not have an update on his return. And so it makes you wonder. Woj is not going to report something unless it came from a very reputable source. So he wouldn't take that, like, another reporter's calls Woj and says, "Hey, I'm hearing this or that." Or he reports something if he hears it from the team or from the player. And the team meaning the coaching staff, teammates, the front office, ownership. The player meaning the player, his reps, his agent, or somebody close enough to be relied upon there. So you have to wonder, if the team is denying it, where did this report come from? I don't know. I'm not going to say it came from Isaiah Thomas or anything like that, but because I really don't know. But it is weird. It was really, really, really strange to me that report came out and then it was disputed. I have said that I'm starting to wonder if Isaiah Thomas will even play. At a certain point, you just can't bring a guy back. You can't say, like, a month left in the season, okay, we're going to spend the next month reintegrating this guy and figuring it out, because that's a recipe for absolute disaster. So part of me wonders if Denver looks at their roster and says, we like what Monte Morris is doing. He has been a huge positive for us. We would rather just not rock the boat and maybe agree to a buyout or a trade or whatever you can do. But I still just get – again, I'm not reporting anything here. I'm going out of my way to – this isn't something I'm hearing or reading between the lines. It's just when I look at what the – the information that we all have, I look at it and think, man, I just can't imagine Isaiah Thomas playing this year for the Denver Nuggets. Again, that's my opinion. It conflicts directly with Woj's report, but there's enough weirdness around there for you to kind of crane your neck. Denver's patience in the half court has been really, really good over the last like 2 or 3 weeks. But in this game, you're playing Cleveland. And one of the things, and actually in both games, this was a note. You're playing two of the worst teams in the NBA. And rather than just kind of jacking up shots and going quickly, because it's so easy when you play Cleveland, especially, just the defense was so bad. I mean, the effort, the rotations, the like confusion, they got lost so often. And I think there's a... one of the things that I think was most encouraging about these two games was Denver blew them out, but they didn't blow them out with taking the first available decent shot and just Cleveland wasn't able to contest it. There were possessions where they would have like a 4-on-3 break, not find an open shot, pull the ball out and use 18 seconds of the shot clock with 6-7 passes and then get a layup or a wide open three-pointer. And you think of it, if they're willing to be that patient against a terrible defense, imagine how patient they'll be against a good defense. And that just, I think, gives you a lot of hope. The Nuggets have – guys like Jamal Murray have broken out, and I want to talk about him next now. Malik Beasley, Jamal Murray, these guys have broken out, but they haven't broken out by, like, trying to do too much one-on-one. They've just broken out by trusting the offense to work to find them open and then taking advantage of the openings once they're there. And to me, Nuggets are in a really, really good place over the last couple weeks and really going forward. But Jamal Murray is the reason that I think Nuggets fans should be the most excited as you watch this team over the last couple weeks. He has been absolutely on fire over his last handful of games. In this one, when he catches fire, and I don't know what's more fun. You can hit me up on Twitter. There's two things that the Nuggets do that are more fun than anything else. One is Jokic when he gets passing. When the ball gets popping, and there's sometimes – entire games, entire quarters or whatever, where Jokic is just like the ball's moving and he's just a wizard making assists, and he'll get 6-7 assists in a quarter, 10-11 and a half. And when that happens, you get, it's just so exciting. But I don't know what's more exciting, that or when Jamal Murray heats up in a quarter and just absolutely goes nuclear, which is what happened in the third quarter of this game. He had 26 points total, 8 of 14 shooting, 4 of 7 from the three-point line. But in that third quarter alone, he just went on his own mini run. He got that look in his eye, and you could tell he was playing with a little bit of swagger. Scores 10 points, 4 of 7 from the field, and 2 of 2 from the three-point line. I think one of those, including that pull-up in transition that he has not been very good at this year, but he knocked down, I think, two of them in this game. And that, to me, when you have two players capable of going off at any minute, that's when you really start to elevate your game. You think about the Warriors, and I mean, they're an anomaly, but they've got Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry. Any one of those guys can go off, and on some nights, both do. On some nights, one does, and everybody else plays good, and that's enough to beat you. Well, the Nuggets, I think, are starting to become a team that's like that. When Jokic goes off for a quarter or a half, you know, you're probably going to win. When Jokic goes off one quarter and Murray the other, you're almost certainly going to win. And that's sort of what happened in this game. Jokic dominated the second quarter of this game, and really all game, but the second quarter in particular, and then Murray in the third. And next thing you know, you're up by 25, 30 points. But Jamal Murray, just over the last handful of games, has been incredible. I believe he is probably out of his slump. You know, you never want to declare a slump over, but the way he shot the ball over the last 10 games has been really, really incredible. 20.6 points per game, 44.6% from the field, 46% from the three-point line, which is just insane. He's shooting 6.3 attempts per game and shooting 46%. That's Steph Curry-type numbers. Maybe the attempts, actually, Steph Curry's around like 11 or 12. But still, he's getting up a lot, and he's knocking them down at a 46% rate. He's also dishing out 4.7 assists. So he has made a huge leap throughout the course of this season, and he has made a really big leap over the last 10 games, and he just seems to have his confidence at an all-time high. So the fact that him and Jokic are – as recently as a month ago, I would have said Murray is probably the fifth most important player on this team. I think Now you could argue that he's the second most. I would still put Paul because I think the numbers bear out that when Paul's on the court, the defense is just elevated. The floor for the defense is so high. But Jamal Murray has quickly climbed up. And this is, look, I think Gary Harris is a fantastic player. We always underrate Gary. And maybe as he gets healthy, we're kind of reminded of just how consistently great he is. But Jamal Murray has something different than Gary in that Jamal Murray has those quarters where the game's over. Gary Harris, maybe every now and then he's hit some big shots, but he's just steady. He kind of keeps you in games. Jamal Murray, when he starts to go off and he crosses half court and you just know the ball's going up and he scores 10, 12, 13, 14 points in a quarter, that's when that just changes the game for Denver. And he's been so good with that over the last handful of games that you have to be encouraged. And then what I'm most encouraged by is just think about the leap he has made from October till now. We're only halfway through the season. He probably has another leap in him from now until April, and then he's still going to be 22 years old at the end of the year, so he just has a lot more room to grow, and if he can consistently become this 40-plus percent three-point shooter on volume, Denver is in a really, really, really good place. That's it for today. A little bit of a shorter one, recapping some of these old games, but definitely check out the episode prior to this one, dropped on Friday afternoon. Interview with Tim Connelly, and he had some great stuff. He even had an update on Jared Vanderbilt, whom I should close with that, with a couple notes here about Vanderbilt and Michael Porter Jr. On the podcast, Malone mentioned that Vanderbilt was probably a week or two away. It sounds like he would probably be heading to the G League sometime this week or next, which is exciting because as much as I've enjoyed tracking Thomas Welsh in the G League, I'm even more excited to watch Jared Vanderbilt. The G League games you can watch on Facebook. They stream them live on there for free. And I'm going to watch because Jared Vanderbilt is a player I'm very intrigued by, and I just want to see what he looks like on the court. And then with Michael Porter Jr., you know, we got treated to some reports this week. Actually, Michael Malone himself sort of dished on him. He was asked about Michael Porter Jr., but he was asked about this last week, and he said something to the effect of, man, that guy, you guys should see him in practice. He's pure scorer, pure shooter, and he's been doing some drills with them, not like contact work, but participating in some of the drill work with practice. And he just said his skill level is just so high, it really makes you dream. And it's one of those things where Malone's not the kind of guy to just kind of BS through these types of questions and stuff. So him talking about him and the excitement that he sort of conveyed when talking about how much he's impressed and specifically impressed with his shooting and with his ball handling, the ability to put the ball on the floor at his height and just his feel for the game. He talks about how that really gets you excited for what this team could be. And I got to say, Michael Porter Jr. has not felt real to me, really. I mean, the draft happened, you know, it was fun, all of that, but it's almost been like I put him out of mind because of some of the stuff I just heard and I anticipate and still do that he'll miss this entire season to a redshirt year. But hearing Malone talk about him and then just seeing him on the court, I'll give this little anecdote that I thought was really cool. The other day as we're interviewing Malone, Michael Porter Jr. is playing a shooting competition with Will Barton, and I can't remember who else it was, maybe Torrey Craig. The three of them are doing like a three-point shooting competition, and they're just jawing at each other. Well, I see Michael Porter Jr. do the James Harden step back three and nail it, of course, and then Barton tells him it's a travel. That's a travel, and he goes, no, I'll show you. I've been working on this move or whatever, and he kind of demonstrates in slow motion the James Harden look, it is a travel. I'm not going to lie. It is a travel, but that step back three-pointer, and what I liked about that, it reminded me of Jamal Murray. I told this story maybe a year or two ago where Jamal Murray was working out with Stephen Graham, one of the player development coaches, and they were working on post moves, and it was him, Gary Harris, and Moutier, and Stephen Graham kind of shows him a move, and of course Moutier goes up and you know, half-asses the move. It's just like the details didn't matter. It's a fall-away jumper, and he just kind of shoots it. Gary Harris, kind of the same thing. Jamal Murray was like, doing the move like 7 or 8 times in slow motion, just trying to get the footwork down and then slowly speeding it up. And you kind of saw like, okay, that's a guy who really enjoys all the little subtle nuances of the game and tries to perfect every little detail of it. Well, watching Michael Porter Jr. for that one, and again, I'm extrapolating a lot just from one observation, but he at least had that same thing in him where you could say like, oh man, he really enjoys not just the going out and hooping part, but he likes the tiny details of it. And so the fact that he had actually worked on the footwork and the handwork for that step back jumper makes me think this is a guy that probably is going to continue to add moves to his arsenal as his career goes on. And I just say that all to get Nuggets Nation excited, because I still don't think he will play, but it's neat to hear that behind the scenes somewhere the Nuggets are getting a look at this guy, and allegedly he is really impressing from just the upside perspective. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back again all week with brand new episodes.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.